at this point, let's talk about, you already said they asked you to run for third vice president, and you said yes, and that's how you became president.
That's how I got in the line.
At that time, what kind of an agenda would you have in mind, or what could you use that year as president for in terms of exerting a lasting influence on the society?
Well, I got to think about that a little bit. I don't think presidents have a great deal of influence on society, to get right down to it. The society has a momentum of its own, and the very important people, the staff, who are dedicated to it. But what you can do in the several years that you have contact is to, if the society was getting too theoretical, is to push it back to a more moderate position, or too industrial to push it back to a moderate position. And the big thing was to make that journal work during my time. If the journal failed, the society was going to close down. That was the thing that it had going. And I spent most of my time on that and trying to make sure that the meetings were of the kind that the members wanted. And you could detect that better back then when we had our meetings in places like Buffalo and not Honolulu. Honolulu, you can't tell whether it's the papers or the place. But Buffalo, you can. I'm not picking on Buffalo, but...
No, I understand. That's a good point.
You know, Birmingham, Alabama, kind of thing. So it was to make the society as effective and useful to the members as possible. And the other problems were all nitty-gritty. How do you pay for this? Is the dues high enough, or is it too high, or are three people too much for the staff? Not enough, that kind of stuff. So it was a management problem. Philosophically, the society, I thought, was doing what it was supposed to do. And it had its hands full paying for the journal.
Did you have to maintain a public interface that year? Did you go out on the road?
Yeah, I went to... It doesn't have nearly the number of sections that ACS has, but I'd say I went to 10 of them. Concentrated in the East, because that's where most of them were. There was a section down here by that time. There was a section in Los Angeles. There was a section at Hoover Dam, because the titanium plant that was in that little town right near, between Las Vegas and the dam. There weren't a whole lot of sections, but I went to maybe a quarter of them, maybe a third. And that, you know, that's kind of worthwhile. People see that there's somebody live out of this, out of the headquarters. But it's not a big thing. The big thing was to maintain the finances so that you could do that which you thought was important. And the two things that were important were the good journal and the good meetings.
What kind of feeling did you sense from the meeting with these local sections? Were the members happy, or did they give you good feedback for improvement?
They were not unhappy, because I won't say I didn't find any suggestions for change that were of some use, but I don't think there were a whole lot of them. They knew what they felt, but they didn't know anything about the workings of society. So I'd tell them how it works, how it worked. And then ask for what changes would you make, if that were the arrangement you had to deal with. Basically, the problem was, occasionally the dues were too high. They were $15 at the time or something like that, which was pretty good size money. Or it's too far to go to get to the meetings, they have meetings closer to me, say, have the Cincinnati go across I can get to. Or you jokers don't know a good paper when you see one. That kind of stuff. And I'm not being derogatory of the business of moving around, because you can't tell when the good idea is going to come. So you have to scrub the place. But by and large, there was no major complaint. It takes too long to review a paper. It used to take 8 months or 9 months from taking the paper in to publishing it. Now it takes about a year and a half or a year and a quarter. And they didn't like it then and don't like it now, right? So my answer is, you know, the combination of concern about the length of time always led us to a study of how long does it really take and whose fault is it that it takes so long, because after all the authors are involved with it too. And if the author holds it for 4 months and it takes 8 months, that's not bad. That kind of lecture I'd have to give them once in a while. By and large, it was nice give and take, and I think they felt they knew more about the society. I didn't always take away a feeling that I learned anything, except that there are certain common complaints, and they are common. It just spread across the whole thing. And most of those complaints you can't do a whole lot about, but you might be able to do something about it.
You've indicated that all of your division editors were volunteers with no pay at this time.
Correct.
You had a part-time, were getting some money for a part-time secretary.
Yeah.
What about the year that you were president? Did you finance your traveling and everything, or did they?
No, the society paid for society travel.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure of that. I don't think this place would have done it. Back then we had some pretty archaic things, you know. If you flew, you were on one per diem until you crossed the border. And then per diem changed. I flew or train, you know. But inside the state you were selling $6 a day, and outside the state you're on $8 a day. So travel was not that easy at that time.
Okay. And how was it working with the society's headquarters office?
All right. We had some nice, what I consider nice people and able people. I went through two or three, in my total period, I went through three secretaries, three society secretaries. I'm not talking about the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all good people. They all, I think, did very well. The society obviously doesn't, I don't think, is competitive in wages and other emoluments. In fact, they moved out to the country, to Pennington, to sort of compensate for what they couldn't pay in New York. And in fact, that was a good deal. They got better people who didn't want to live in New York. That's what it meant. So it's never been a high-paying place. If you wanted to make the most money, that's not the job you take. But they're hard-working people. Linford, Henry Linford was the secretary.
Okay.
I don't know why it suddenly popped in.
Well, we've talked a little bit about accomplishments and problems. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, nothing I can think of.
Okay. We've talked a little bit about the relationship of the society to ACS, and maybe looking at it in its relationships to other societies, because you said there was Corrosion Engineers had their own organization.
I would say that the society wasn't standoffish, but there wasn't a whole lot of overlap between it and other. I think it looked on itself as being closer to the Faraday Society than anything else. In fact, we once talked about calling it the Gibbs Society, in order to be more nearly parallel. And the transactions were don't know who started, they're the same as the Faraday Society transactions. Both of them switched late 40s. And it has, I think, on one or two occasions had joint meetings with other societies. I think in Honolulu they had one with the Japanese Chemical Society. By and large, there was this inimical feeling between ACS and ECS for a long time. Probably doesn't exist now. But it didn't have that kind of relationship with any other. And I think the one with the ACS was predominantly the personal animosity between Fink and Parsons, which probably grew out of the fact that Parsons wanted to get out. I mean, Fink wanted to get out. So now with industrial sponsors, it was pretty good. Certain industrial sponsors, Dow, some of the others, companies that were interested in this general area. Chloralkali industry obviously had an interest. As I told you, Aluminum Company of America was interested through Bob Mears, who recognized the value of basic electrochemistry to his problems, his research and development problems. So I think there were a dozen or so industrial sponsors, maybe two dozen industrial sponsors, who looked on the society with great interest. And they're the ones you'd expect them to be, the ones that were in the field.
What kind of support did they, in addition to supporting their employees and attending meetings and things like that?
Well, they took out these ads in the journal, what do you call them? Not house ads, but institutional kinds of ads. The Nickel Company.
Okay.
And that's all I had to say. So they did that kind of thing. I think occasionally sponsored symposia of interest to them, perhaps some money to help bring speakers in. Or send people to meetings, which was very important to us. And interestingly enough, we published a lot of papers that came out of industrial research labs. I'm sure the publication came after the patent, mm-hmm. if there were such. But I'd say that, and I can't guarantee if this is true, but I think it is, that the percentage of papers that came from industrial labs total were higher in this journal than it is in the other journals, including industrial engineering, chemistry, and the chemical engineer and all the rest of those things to publish CAG the papers, because many of them come out of academia. But we published a lot of industrial papers.
Well, I think this was also a time when industry was changing, and it wasn't this terrible secrecy at the early part of the century the companies had. Mm-hmm. And they recognized that it was important to, once you already protected yourself through patents,
the interaction was valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Of course, that was the root of the Gordon conferences. Not only between the academia and the industry, but across the industry. So, anyway, I wouldn't be surprised that maybe half our papers, certainly back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, were industrial. The various divisions, there have been lots of co-sponsored symposia, and that's about the best way that they do it. That is, industrial electrolytic would get together with physical electrochemistry, and they'd have a symposium on mass transfer, for example, which was of interest to both sides. As I said, the semiconductor things, I think, stemmed out of dielectric and insulation. And there are dielectric materials which you just displace an atom here or there, you can get a semiconductor out of it. If you heat it or cool it, you can get a conductor or something like that. Mm-hmm. Physical electrochemistry, I think at one time it was called theoretical electrochemistry, but that word dropped out when theoretical chemistry became more powerful. Theoretical or physical electrochemistry was very frequently a co-sponsor with each of the other divisions, corrosion, insulation, all the rest of them. When the society decided to publish in two parts in the same journal, solid state and electrochemistry, the interaction was predominant in each of these divisions rather than across the divisions, although occasionally there would be some across the dividing line. So I'd say internally the various divisions interact quite nicely with each other. They don't have nearly as, for a long time they haven't had the disciplinary plenum that a university has. They recognize the importance of knowing some of them across the fence, and so they get together and do it. So that part worked very well in this society.
At first glance, when you look at the various divisions, they almost look so diverse you wonder how they could interact with each other.
Some of them do, yeah. For example, it's hard to see where electro-organic would fit, except with physical electrochemistry in terms of reaction rates, orders, and things of that sort. But you know, by virtue of the fact that it's not a big outfit, and the guys at the banquet sit together and talk to each other, you produce the sessions five years down the line. Mm-hmm. That's, if you look at the coming meetings, you'll find that there are a lot of interactive symposium, quite a few. And it may be that it's now happening in other societies, but not nearly as much as I think is happening.
Well, that certainly builds a stronger organization when you have that kind of interaction.
Absolutely.
We did touch on number 10 briefly, but I think we just skipped over it here. I don't know whether you want to add anything else. The relationship between the academic and industrial contingents. We talked about this a couple times earlier.
Well, in the sense that this is a more intimate group, a society, it works out pretty well. They certainly don't just isolate from one another. I think it was a lot better in the earlier days than it is now, maybe, or than it might have been for some years in the recent past. Of course, in the earlier days, the academic was in the minority. In the 60s and 70s and 80s, they began to be the majority, I think. And there may have been, I was going to use the word antagonism, but that's not a proper word. There may have been some indifference, one to the other, because cooperation has never been as productive as the cooperators would like it to be. And, you know, you begin to shake your finger at the system that says cooperate when you don't gain as much as you think you ought to. It certainly is as good as any other group, and maybe better because it's smaller. And the interest is on the field rather than on their own.
Okay.
Bailiwick.
Number 12, how has the society contributed or reacted to significant scientific events in electrochemistry and related fields?
Well, it's generally been on its toes. In fact, might have been on its toes too much during the cold fusion business. Although that hasn't been laid to rest by any manner of means. But it did get involved quickly in that one and had a number of conferences and symposia, a number of debates, and sometimes rather hot debates. But by and large, it reacted to the business of semiconductor systems as electrochemical arenas very quickly. Early in the game, the business of dealing with microelectronic systems came up, silicon Kelly Morris and I were in the very early parts of the journal. It was a sizable player in STM. And using it as a tool, that is, it didn't help invent it, but it quickly used it. It was very important, it seems to me, in developing the aspect that if one used electrochemical instrumentation, you had means of control which you hadn't had before. Therefore, you ought to go back and look at your problems with the fresh instruments, because you might find that you were wrong in the first place with the information you had. I think it did that pretty quickly and pretty well. It got into the game of sensors right at the beginning.
See if that's. I think we're all right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about point number 12.
Yeah. I started to say that the use of electronic instrumentation for potentiostats, for example, for measuring electrochemical inductance spectra, that kind of thing. The society reacted quickly in publishing papers on these things, sensors. In fact, there's a sensor that works. You don't have to hold it.
Okay.
there's a sensor division now. So I'd say that the nose for news is pretty good in that society. As it, you know, got deeply involved in cold fusion because there were two electrochemists that first spoke about it. The business of maintaining good potential control, for example, is very important in lots of electrochemical processes, lots of free radical processes. The organic chemists came back into the field. For a long time, organic electrochemistry was very empirical. But now, if you look through the JACS or other journals that publish a lot of organic papers, electrochemistry is scattered all through them. They don't show up in this society particularly anymore. But the use of electrochemical process procedures in synthetic chemistry is first rate. And the society recognized that in a hurry. The answer to 13 is straightforward. It really is a very responsive society. The number of layers of bureaucratic layers is just small enough so you can get things through. They can't always do something for you, but they hear you and respond. And on 14, I'd say that using the sinusoidal nature of that question, that financial ways will have always been the problem.
Okay.
I think the society looks very carefully, it always did in my time with them, at the journal and at the meetings. And those are the two important things. Those are the only two things that have any consequence. Everything else is sort of, maybe not frivolous, but peripheral. Mm-hmm. And they've always been very careful to keep that in the center of their attention. And on an almost daily basis, worry about whether the meetings are doing what they're supposed to or the journal's doing what it's supposed to. And I think that's pretty important.
Ron, as you said earlier, that technical orientation is foremost.
Yeah.
Over anything else.
Over everything
compared
else.
To ACS, who goes off and does all kinds of other
things.
Yeah,
worries about the wages and accreditation and all that kind of stuff. And about their own position in Washington. Well, 15's a great broad question, but obviously I met lots of people from whom I gathered understanding of the field and with whom I had sometimes deeply embedded contacts with industry and other institutions, but with industry predominantly. So the society, although I didn't join it for that reason, and I didn't stay in it for that reason, the society has certainly been very good to me in terms of making accessible individuals I might not have run across otherwise. I would never have seen McQuee just offhand. As Vice President of Research and Development for INCO, he wouldn't have come down here to look for people. Mears was Director of Research at Alcoa. I was a young squirt. Chances I'd never see him. So it was good. And again, it's the smallness, I think, that makes a difference.
Did it help you to place your students?
Directly, no. Indirectly, yes. I'm trying to think of a place where it was critical to the placement of the student. I can't.
Okay.
It was useful, but never critical. I'd have a student who would want to go to a certain part of the country, but he wanted to be an industrial chemist in the Northeast, say, because it would help them to know that. But it was never the final word on placement.